It's October 3rd, 2011, and this is the Hell Yeah Show. Hello and welcome to the Hell Yeah Show. I'm Alan.
I'm Emery.
And I'm calling it Best Practices for Finer Living this week. Switching it up a bit. Advice on how to not let technology ruin your day. And this one is the Home Theater Show. What do you think about that?
I think it's great. You know, I wish I had practiced it because it occurs to me that I could have done like that Bugs Bunny number where he dances across the stage. I think that would have been great for an intro. I love home theater. It's one of my many little hobbies.
Good.
It's something I like a lot.
We're going to get in depth about some various bits and pieces of home theater setups. And talk about some current trends in home theater and our thoughts on them. But before we get to that, we have a little news flash. I wish we had that little da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah, no kidding.
News flash, Kindles came out this past week.
I am so surprised. First of all, what was our prediction on the price? I think we nailed it.
Our prediction, to be fair, was not entirely our prediction.
Alan, can we please just be right?
And our prediction, I believe, was actually $250. So it actually came in under the predicted price.
Oh, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, I mean, $250 seemed really cheap.
We were also kind of on the fence on Wi-Fi or 3G, though. So.
Yes.
But yeah, I'm super pumped. And you got one already.
There's a couple new Kindles that came out. The one I was referring to it's actually $199. We guessed it would be $250. Is the Amazon tablet, the Kindle Fire. But there's actually, they released several new Kindles. They've got a whole line of Kindles now. So I'm just going to run through them real quick here. At the base level, you've got the basic Kindle for $109. No keyboard, no 3G available on that model. You can't even get that model with 3G. Has to be Wi-Fi. Then a step up is the Kindle Touch, $139 for Wi-Fi, $189 for 3G. Step above that, or actually even with that, is the Kindle Keyboard, which is just the Kindle Touch, but with a keyboard instead of touch controls, $139 without 3G, $189 with 3G. And then at the top of the line, quote-unquote, is the Kindle Fire, which is their tablet, which is $199. And no 3G available for that, just Wi-Fi.
Okay. Now, does the Kindle keyboard also have a multi-touch display, or is that just the keyboard?
No, the Kindle keyboard only has a keyboard. The Kindle keyboard is actually basically the previous generation of Kindle. They're just still making it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, but they came out with these new models, the Touch, which of course doesn't have a keyboard because the keyboard is on screen. But now that they've got this on-screen keyboard, they realized that it's actually not terrible to move a directional control around the keyboard like you would on a home theater program or a video game console and peck individual keys, because you don't really use a keyboard on the Kindle that much unless you take copious notes.
And why would you?
Right. Yeah.
I mean, like highlighting and stuff is pretty much all you'd ever. I mean, and
highlighting doesn't require a keyboard.
Yeah,
unless you're going to make notes, but that's not. If you were using it for maybe a class, or you were actually using the Kindle DX for textbooks or that sort of thing, then I could maybe see it. But I certainly don't think I ever use the annotation feature. And I had the second generation Kindle, which had a full keyboard. And I only use that keyboard once in a while to basically either put in a web address in the browser or to search for a book on the Kindle store.
All right.
So not that big of a deal, not having a keyboard. And as a result, they were able to significantly lessen the size of this base Kindle.
Yep. I noticed that one was awfully svelte, I believe is the word.
It's not a whole lot bigger than the screen itself. It gives you just enough room around the sides to grip it really comfortably. I'm actually holding it in my hand right now.
Did you sleep with it?
Yeah, well. it's super cheap, and it does everything you want in an e-reader for in a really compact, really easy to hold package. With everything I want out of a Kindle. It actually has less features than my second generation Kindle, and I'm happier with it.
Yeah, well, it's better execution, it sounds like, and more portability. And
yep, it actually fits in a back pocket.
I was looking for, what was it? I was looking at the Kindle Fire the day that it was announced, and one of my colleagues was like, really eyeballing it, and I was like, you know, it's kind of funny because none of the pictures they have actually show you how thick it is, and the Kindle Fire looks like it's kind of got some heft to it.
Oh, really?
Like, I know the weight doesn't. I think it's probably it weighs very similar to what an iPad 2 weighs, but
right.
It looked like it was maybe like it looked kind of thick in the photos.
Huh.
And I couldn't quite tell. And it's, you know, looking at the measurements, reading them on the website, like X number of millimeters doesn't really mean a whole lot to me. But
yeah, well, it is 7-inch, so they've got to fit more into the smaller package.
That's true.
But presumably they need a smaller battery to power that screen and that sort of thing. But
yeah,
I'm not sure. You actually cannot get a Kindle Fire until I believe the date is November 15th. But they are taking pre-orders right now. So no one's done really a hands-on yet.
I'd like to know, like, I think just having Wi-Fi is fine. But it occurs to me that, like, sometimes I would want to have, like, a video or something for the bus. And I know that I could do that on the iPad, and it wasn't clear to me. Because the only port that the Kindle has that I could tell is a USB port. Does the Fire have an SD slot or anything?
I don't believe it does. I'm not sure, though.
Yeah, and if it does, I don't know what you can put on it or anything like that. It's
So an interesting thing is Amazon has come out and said you can go ahead and root it.
Really?
Yeah.
All right.
No complaints about that, which is kind of odd because I'm guessing $199 is subsidized. I'm guessing that's not at cost. What do you think?
I don't know. I think that, again, they're counting on an awful lot of inventory being moved on these things. And they're also assuming that people that buy them are going to be buying content for them.
That's what I figured.
And I think that's a very safe, I don't think it's a loss leader though. I mean, it does have an awful lot of capabilities going for it. I don't know much about the under the hood stuff. So it's possible that maybe because they're able to do things like Silk, so that the web browsing takes place server side, it's possible that they don't need as much CPU power there. But on the other hand, they've got this thing playing video, right?
Sure.
So it's got to have enough oomph for that.
Well, it's got a dual core processor, sounds like.
Yeah. All right.
That's but it does. I'm looking at pictures of it now and thinking back to your point about the thickness.
See what I'm saying?
Yeah, you see these side pictures of it. No.
They don't ever give you a full side picture.
Yeah. No, you just see these hints of side pictures.
It's like that 45 degree angle.
Yeah.
It's like, you ever, like, on OkCupid, you'll be looking at a chick and it's like you can't tell if, like, because she's got, you know, the camera's up at the top and it's at a weird angle. Have you ever browsed like any of these sites like this?
I'm fascinated that you have.
Oh yeah, I've seen them all. But there's always like these creative ways of taking pictures that can kind of minimize things that you might not want to reveal. I'm the king of this because I typically don't like how I look in photos, so I know what my angle shot is that I look really thin.
And I've seen at least three or four different pictures of you where you looked like a completely different person.
yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's my design.
Anyway.
I understand that, you know, if they don't want people to make that direct comparison, and maybe they're sensitive about the Kindle Fire's weight. Maybe they think that its figure is a little pudgy and they want to thin down. They don't want to make it feel bad. I don't know.
It does look pretty slick though overall.
Oh, I think it's a fine package. I never got the iPad 2, and I really like my original iPad, but it's possible that I wouldn't go for an iPad 3. I mean, it really depends.
Wow. Yeah. Well, what do you think about the difference between the 7-inch and the, 10.1 that the iPad is?
Well, the iPad's going to be a better tablet.
Yeah.
I think for, like, general computing and stuff, I think the iPad's going to be a superior device. A very small 7-inch lightweight display that plays video and is an excellent book reader. It could be pretty good. Although in the case of the Kindle Fire, like the reason that I would entertain getting a hardware Kindle is because of that e-ink display. And since it doesn't have a hybrid display, that kind of lessens the value proposition there, I think. But like I said before, I'm not really a heavy reader. And if I was, I'd probably be very annoyed with the iPad.
Yeah.
But having said that, like when I read something, it's for a half hour to an hour. I don't sit down for a stretch of, you know, a couple of hours like my wife does or like you might. Like I don't run the risk of eye fatigue from using a glossy full color display.
Do you read on e-ink for those half hours though?
No. Okay. No, I don't have a Kindle or anything. I use the Kindle software. I don't buy any books through iBooks. I think that Kindle, I like Kindle better in that regard.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Like some of the like a lot of stuff that I have, like that the DRM free books from O'Reilly, for example, when I buy those, I put those through iBooks for the iPad, and yeah. I love that. But I don't think I've bought anything through iBooks. I mean, it's not that I don't like them. It's just that I had Kindle first, and I bought a couple of books there. Actually, I probably bought like a dozen titles through the Amazon Kindle store. And so I figure that's where I've got all my stuff, so that's kind of where I'm going to stay.
It's a platform that's available in more places too. You can get the Kindle. Yeah, you can get anything you buy in Kindle. You can get on your Mac, your PC, your iPhone, iPad, Android. So
yeah, I mean, it's not like I really have a burning need to view my Kindle books on a Windows PC at the office, but
I did
check out the Windows 8 beta today though for like all of 20 minutes. I put it on my Dell Attitude.
Wow.
Yeah.
Nice. Any quick impressions?
Oh, people are going to go bananas when they see. Like, first of all, that you have to like whisk up the login screen by flicking. That's going to drive people. Like, people thought that like the reverse scroll wheel online was bad. Like, this is going to make people's heads explode. But I think I like it. I mean, Windows 8, this isn't my observation. This is either, far more influential people. Like, I think it was either Syracuse or Gruber pointed out that Windows 8 actually is, for all the people that complain that Lion has so much iOS in it, and it's like turning your Mac into an iPad, Windows 8 actually has a touch interface. Like, Lion doesn't actually give you touch anything.
Sure. Yep.
Everything in Lion that you do with a touchpad is all gesture-based, and it's through a touchpad. Windows 8 is actually built to support actively interacting with the objects on the display. And that's going to be really interesting for people.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be fun to watch. We'll see what happens.
I'm actually pretty stoked. I think there's a lot of things about Windows 8 today that I kind of think are rather charming.
But, all right. Yeah. Back to the Kindle, though. Real quick, we wanted to also talk about Amazon Silk.
Yeah, so they have all this people that have been using Opera Mini for their smartphones, like on Nokia Series 60 or UIQ for Sony Ericsson devices.
All those three people.
Yeah, both of them have been using. No, there's actually, I mean, there were millions of people using Series 60, right? But they're no longer Nokia employees. I guess Brian Jepsen last week, I made some snide comment, and he said that apparently everyone that was in the S60 group is now like an Accenture employee.
Wow.
Yeah, which is pretty much, you couldn't find bigger nails for that coffin than Accenture.
Sure.
But, it's, the concept is great. Like I said, it's going to depend on how it actually plays out, but the requests that you make are going to be shuffled off to a data center, and the one thing Amazon is really exceptionally good at is building large cloud services.
Which is kind of weird, because they started off as a retail company.
Yeah, well, they were always electronic, and they always had like this distribution network. Like, I got to tell you, man, like, there was a time where maybe, 5 years ago, I didn't know where Amazon was really headed, and I didn't think that they were really anything special. I mean, I liked them, and I did business with them, and I bought stuff through them all the time, but they have really, they are absolutely as strong of a brand now that as Google, I think.
Sure.
I mean, it might not have the same recognition for different things necessarily, but I mean, there are so many things that Amazon does, and it does all of them pretty well. Like, their distribution is fantastic. Their sales, like their entire marketplace platform, is amazing. They have some really smart people working there. Like, there's nothing I can really complain about with Amazon.
Yeah. I'm sure I can think of something, some gripe I have about them. But in general, yes, they're ordering products through them is a fantastic experience. Hosting web services with them is typically a fantastic experience. They tend to do things pretty well.
The people at Amazon, as a general rule, Amazon as a company is more professional than Google.
Well, they're more of a company.
they're more established and they're more serious. I think that I was asking some questions about EC2 and S3 and stuff, and I was like, you know, what kind of protections do they have in place? You know, and the person I was talking to, what's up, JD? He doesn't work in that group, but he does work at Amazon, and his role is a security role there. Mm-hmm. And he said, you know, they have a really extensive set of audit controls. And they recently passed like their second round of FSMA certification. So you can do, if you have like a service for the federal government that you have to comply with FSMA. I don't want to go super neckbeard on this, but there are some very stringent requirements that you have to be able to satisfy to get some of these certifications, things like PCI and FSMA and FERPA and HIPAA and all that nonsense. But that they're able to satisfy these requirements and that they have such good audit controls. I don't know that Google has that. Like when they had that dude out in, was it Washington or Oregon, who was like peeping into some teenage kids' mailboxes and like, do you remember anything about this?
I do not remember this story. No.
There's some QA engineer that worked at Google who was like, in my opinion, somewhat inappropriately hanging out with teenage kids. And he was like monitoring their emails and stuff. And they didn't know anything about this, right? Like someone had to like lodge a complaint. But I get the impression that like if some dude at Amazon was like sniffing into one of my EC2 instances, they'd know. And someone would be like on top of that from the word go.
Yeah.
And I don't think that Google pays attention to a lot of that.
Well, Google doesn't offer it doesn't offer sort of commodity cloud services yet, at least in the same.
That's nonsense.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, what would you call Google Docs and Google Drive and Gmail?
Okay.
The Google Sites stuff, like all their content stuff. They've got people syncing their entire like enterprise mail into them.
Yeah.
They're not accountable for that. Like, and if you've ever tried to like escalate, because a lot of times you'll get like a phishing email that goes around from our institution, and I'm sure it happens to a lot of people, that ends up at like a Google spreadsheet somewhere. It is asinine how hard it is to get those things taken down. I can get something taken down at Yahoo. There's like only three people and five cron jobs that run Yahoo right now. I can get something taken down from them like in record time. But if I got to go hop through hoops at Google, I get faster results if I like spam the URL onto Twitter and ask like, you know, 200 of my friends to click the report link. And that's BS.
Sure. Yeah.
That's my rant for the night. Actually, that's not my rant for the night. I got one about a local bookstore too. I'm going to tear into when you're done.
All right. So on Amazon Silk though, the point was you can actually opt out of this stuff, right?
Yeah. Before I hit one off on that. might I also point out that I may have been drinking earlier and I might have a tendency to run on even more than usual. But so Amazon Silk, they do all the server side browsing. You make a request, it goes to the data center. The data center grabs the page, and they also grab possibly other pages that are linked from there that you're likely to go to, and they kind of hold on to that for you. And so if you go there, they'll just shuffle it down to you to make it a faster browsing experience. So the hope and the intent is that as you're browsing on your Kindle, you are going to have a much faster browsing experience than you would necessarily even have with your home PC.
Yeah.
And there, I mean, like some of the desktop browsers do this too. They call it prefetching, like Chrome does it, Firefox does it. I'm sure just about everybody does now. But there's some special sauce there that Amazon's got going, and a lot of that is because you know they're going to have magically a million so devices that are all using this, and they've got some information about how they anonymize this data and how they handle it. Which I found pretty reassuring. I mean, I'm not 100% on board with this, but you can, as you pointed out, you can opt out so that you don't have to do the cloud browsing, and then your request will just function like they normally would.
Right. Yeah. So if you're concerned about security, even though according to you, the Amazon ship is pretty tight about that sort of stuff.
Yeah, the problem that you normally would have is that anytime you have someone holding onto your data for you, which you do all the time. Sometimes it's trustworthy people and sometimes it's not. And I think if I got to pick my number one, I think Amazon's probably one of the most trustworthy out there. I think that I have a higher degree of confidence that they're doing what they need to do to protect their end users.
And that said, an opt-out is always a nice thing, though. It's always good to have the option.
And if you are somewhat tinfoily like me, you'll probably opt out, and that's fine.
Yeah, and then I've got actually one gripe about the new Kindle line, and well, the Kindle line in general. I've had this gripe for a little bit. Kindle with special offers.
And what is that?
It's terrible.
What the hell is it?
So you don't know what it is?
Well, I've heard there's like a banner ad, like when you're not reading.
So I didn't get the like version with special offers. I don't actually have any first-hand experience with Kindle with special offers. I just don't like it on principle. So the idea is you buy your Kindle, you get about a, I think it's like $20 to $40 discount on it. And I guess it's 70. Yeah, it's about a $30 discount.
It should be 50% off.
And yeah.
No, I'm dead serious. I think if you're going to sell something and then add, if you're going to subsidize it by spamming ads at people, I don't care if it's like one ad every hour. You know, if you're doing product placement, you got to give it to them for free or at least half off.
So the ads are rather non-intrusive. They don't have any ads in the reading itself. The only places you see ads are on your home screen when you're looking through your book list and on your lock screen when you turn the screen off.
Well, see, I'm fine with the lock screen one, to be honest.
Yeah. Not so much about the home screen?
I don't know. I think it's if it was a 50% discount, sure. You know, yeah. if price is the reason that you're not going to buy one of these, and I don't know that it is. I mean, like in the case of a lot of people, it's just that, you know, they've got thousands of books and they like books.
Yeah.
And they don't like the idea of electronic books, and they don't like the DRM, and they don't like, you know, there are people that have a variety of moral objections to this that I think that's the real holdout. I mean, the price, I mean, God, like the basic model Wi-Fi for $100.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, though. Offering it at $79 instead of $109, that gets into a different price point.
Does it? I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, under $100, that's a different price point.
it's a different price point. I'll give you that. But I think $50 versus $109 would definitely push people.
I think the real problem here, though, is when you go on Amazon, when you click there, the links from the homepage to go to the Kindle entries, when you look at the Kindles on Amazon, the first thing you see is the Kindle with special offers. That's the default. And I think that's not good.
Well, they want to lead with the lowest price they can offer.
Yeah, but then people are going to buy these thinking, well, it's the lower price one and special offers. That sounds good. And then they're going to have a less than satisfactory experience because they have these ads popping up that they didn't expect were going to be there.
Well, we'll see what's up. I mean, my prediction would be that, I mean, in less than a year, I think that Kindle is going to be $49.99.
Really?
Yeah.
That could be good.
I think Kindle special offer is the basic Kindle with just Wi-Fi, e-ink display. I think that guy is going to go for $49.99 in less than 12 months.
All right.
I mean, it's only going to get cheaper. And
you know, we're on a roll so far with Amazon predictions, so I'll give you this one.
Yeah. But you know, my thing about I like ebooks. I love them.
Yes.
I don't like having a lot of stuff around.
No.
Well, that's not true. I love having stuff around, but I don't like having a lot of books around. I have plenty in the house, mainly because my wife is a huge reader who consumes more books than you can possibly imagine. But and I'm sure you can imagine a lot. But we have a local bookstore in town, and they're called Prairie Lights. And we had Neal Stephenson come to town last week.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Yeah.
So here's why I hate Prairie Lights. So my wife was asked if she wanted to pick up Neal Stephenson at the airport. And she said, yes, of course. And the reason she said, yes, of course, is because she was going to send her dear husband, me,
sure,
to go to the airport to pick up Neal Stephenson, who would then be a hostage in my car for about 40 minutes.
Which is fantastic.
And I was going to interview him for the show, right?
Yeah.
Sure, why not? You know, while I'm telling a story. But yeah, so apparently what happened was we were supposed to go pick him up, and then some dude from the writer's workshop is going to be responsible for taking them back. Now, the local bookstore, Prairie Lights, who is organizing all of this, apparently threw a fit and said, well, the publisher we're working with, and then they tried to push it all off onto the publisher, that they only wanted one point of contact and one person, which, you know, I kind of dig. However, they had already set this expectation that, like, other people could be involved in this, right? Because it was going to be a big deal. And so I was disappointed to begin with that I wasn't going to get to, you know, have some one-on-one time with Neal Stephenson, who, by the way, wrote, you know, Snow Crash,
yes,
which is one of my favorite books, and several others. Cryptonomicon is also good. I also, everything I've read from him is fantastic. So then I'm like, well, okay, fine. I don't get to meet him, you know, in the car, but that's fine because I'll still go to the reading and it'll still be good. And you can sign my copy of Snow Crash.
Yep.
No, because he's I forgot we're trying to maintain the non-explicit label. These savages at Prairie Lights, they have a big sign up when I get to the library. So all of the notices and emails, all the promotional material says, if you want, you know, we're going to be selling copies of his new book, Reamd. And if you want to have him sign something else, you know, a couple of things that's okay, like, you know, think two or three. And I was like, okay, fine. Only thing I want him to sign is my dog-eared, yellowed copy of Snow Crash that I absolutely adore. So we get there, and there's a big sign up saying, if you don't buy the book here from us, he's not signing it.
Wow.
I mean, I'm somewhat paraphrasing, but it said, you know, Neal Stephenson will be signing books that you purchase here from us. And I turned around and I said, I'm leaving. Like I was so pissed. I was so mad. And I was like, I don't even know. Like, there's already like this constant like stream of kicking the balls, the entire thing, and not necessarily their fault. But when I get there, and then they're like trying to play like hide and seek with this, and they want to like they want me to support them, a local bookseller, like a so-called, I might add, local bookseller, because the only thing really local about the bookseller is that the people that work there are from the town. Because, you know, to be honest, like, it's not like they're making the books here, right? Like, you know, the whole buy local movement, I support when it's things like a farmer's market or a local craftsman or a local trade of some sort. But if your local support is just a local retail operation, you know, Walmart is just as local as that is.
Well, I mean, there's a possibility that something like a local bookstore managed by local people that becomes a sort of community a meeting place, builds a group of people around it, that
sure.
sort
and
of
it's
thing.
Great that they can bring all these people in so they can kick them in the balls when they get there with a copy of the book that they bought years ago because they don't want to buy a brand new one just to have someone sign it.
I'm just saying there's a potential there that isn't necessarily there with a store like Walmart, to have a community around,
you know,
the store.
Walmart's got parking. This bookstore has no parking. I'm just saying.
Clearly, categorically.
I mean, when Obama was in town, he bought books there. That's like pretty much the only like, ooh. Like, I don't know. I'm done with it.
I mean, all right. You've moved to ebooks.
Yeah, well, I was well on my way. I mean, I'm not gonna lie and make up some tale that like I'm a huge books buyer, because I'm not. But will I ever buy anything from them ever again? No, absolutely not. Like, that was a dick move, and they knew it was a dick move, and they're, you know, whatever.
All right. Okay. Go ahead. What?
That's it.
That's your rant. Okay. This is a ranty show so far. I wonder how we're gonna do when we get into home theater.
Let me tell you about remotes.
Yeah. Go for it. Well, okay. Let me introduce this first. So we want to talk about home theater stuff. We're going to talk about a variety of just assorted random topics that we sort of pulled out of our hats when we thought about home theater. And yep. The first of those is remotes. So go for it.
Well, see, so many years ago when I first went down this road, I've owned many multifunction universal remotes, right? You remember one called the Philips Pronto? Did you ever see that?
No.
Well, it was an LCD touch panel remote. And you could like teach it macros and all kinds of stuff, and you could create your own button layouts. It was pretty cool.
I had a Radio Shack Chameleon.
That sounds like a piece of crap. But
no, it was good.
Sounds terrible. The Pronto, actually, the one that I had was the slightly fancier Marantz version, called the, God, what was it? I think it was like the RC 5000i, I think. Something along those lines. Okay. And the only difference was that it was a different color and that it had a slightly more memory that I would never use. but because I was a fancy lad and I had to have it, that's the one that I had. I also had a Marantz MK2002 or something like that. I still have that one. But the best universal remote, because I know everyone's waiting to hear, is the Logitech Harmony.
Okay. I've definitely heard of the Logitech Harmony.
The Logitech Harmony is an amazing remote control. First of all, it removes the layer of abstraction for like, do I have to be on the amp or the TV, HDMI 1, put the amp on CD, and then the TV out on, you know what I mean? Like all that whole song and dance.
Sure.
That
yeah.
you do, that's all gone with the Harmony, because it's all activity based, right? So like, you can set it up, you just tell it what components you have. And you say, this is my model of DVD player. This is my model of preprocessor, amp, or AV receiver. This is my laser disc player. This is my mini disc player. All that stuff. And then it builds this table for you, and you would get presented with options when you hit a button on your remote. There'll be like a little window at the top, and they even make like a bigger touch panel version now. But the model that I have is very modest. It has like four lines of text and then hardware buttons everywhere, which I like. But it's all activity based, right? So if I just hit the button at the top and it says like there's options at the top. One of them is watch a DVD. And wow. Another is play Wii. One is play PS3. One is watch live TV. And then I've got other options too.
But these are things you've programmed in.
Well, not necessarily, right? Like I just went to the website and I told it what I had and then it built it for me.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And then you plug in a USB cable and it just flashes it to your remote. And then all your stuff just works.
Does it still do? I remember with the Chameleon, this universal remote, which was not too bad. Although you would actually call into a phone number. And it would download specifications to the remote by holding the phone up to the remote.
Was it an acoustic coupler?
Yeah.
Was it like War Games where you have to like hang the phone up on it?
It was pretty fantastic.
Professor Falcons of programming your remote for you. That's
awesome. But
never even heard of that. That sounds
okay.
Horrible.
Okay, so it's all happening via USB now. I'm a bit behind the times, apparently.
Yeah. So what's awesome though is that then like my mother-in-law, who God bless her, could not tell you what a DVD even is compared to a CD. Like she doesn't know the difference. Like she knows one's got a movie on it and one plays music.
Sure.
But when she can walk up to a remote and hit the, you know, watch a DVD or watch a movie button, because that's actually what it is, because it's Blu-ray or DVD on the PS3, you know, that flips everything over and the little thing comes out and it's like, okay, you know, feed me a movie and I'm good to go. Like, that's awesome.
Huh.
Like, people can use our home theater equipment without having any a priori knowledge of what input goes to what.
Sure.
Like, they hit Apple TV, they get Apple TV. They hit PS3, they play PS3. It's awesome.
Great.
Love the Harmony. It's the best one you can get. Hands down. I can't think of anything better. There's nothing that's nearly... And what's great about the Harmony is that you can also do the device level if you want. You can still switch from device to device.
Well, because it does have a bunch of physical buttons too, right? A bunch of hard... Yeah.
Yeah. My model has, you know, everything that you would expect. It has like a joypad control thing for like, you know, left, right, up, down, select.
Channel up and down, volume. Yeah.
Has a menu button, a guide button, an info button. And you can customize them. You can be every bit as granular as you want to be with the Harmony. But having said that, if you just want to have your stuff work and you've got a couple of minutes just to tell it what you got and what goes to what, everything will work for you.
All right.
Which kind of leads me to the other thing, too, because I had to buy, well, I didn't have to, but in the process of, like, putting some new furniture together, I bought, like, a new TV stand. And, like, some people who are listening to this and know me and have seen the wonders of the craptastic $50 IKEA TV stand that I've owned for a very long time are probably delighted to hear that I've replaced it. I have doubled my investment by going to Target and purchased.
Oh, wow. Wow, from IKEA to Target. That's a step up.
Hey, big spender.
But
it's much nicer looking. It's much cleaner looking. I like it a lot. And I put it together and I was rewiring everything and I'm like digging around back. And I've had this, my AV receiver used to be, and I still have it, is a Marantz SR7000. And it's a beautiful, beautiful piece of equipment. I love it to pieces. The problem that I have is that in this wonderful digital age, I need more inputs than I could have with it, and it didn't do HDMI, and I've got a problem with HDMI pass-through and copy protection going through the TV, because when it leaves the TV through the digital out, then it gets mangled somehow, and there's certain things work well, some don't. I was having some issues with it, so I replaced it. And I went out to, and I mean, I got to remember, like, looking back, like the Marantz I bought, I had to have purchased in like 1999. Wow. So I've had it for a very long time, and I'm
dependable.
Gonna repurpose it. Oh, amazing! Like I said, it's easily like one of the nicest pieces of consumer electronics I've ever owned. Super reliable, performs great, very well made. For about less than a quarter of the price, I was able to buy a Pioneer. I didn't go Pioneer Elite, just off the shelf Best Buy, with five HDMI inputs, and two component inputs and basically everything that I could possibly need.
Yeah.
And more. And it was very inexpensive. Works great. And now, nowadays, like, you don't have to do like a manual, what's it called? Like a calibration. Like all the new Pioneer models, and I'm sure everyone does this now, you just plug in like a microphone that you put in the middle of your floor and you hit a button and it calibrates all your speakers for you.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that was awesome.
That's great.
Yeah. It was pretty cool.
Do you have to have your own microphone or is there one included?
Came with one.
Wow.
I mean, it's not a great microphone, but it doesn't
matter. No, sure, but it's enough to do what it needs to do.
It's a little disc and it has like, you know, a like 25 foot headphone cord that's
yep.
attached to it, and you put it in the middle of the room, you tap a button, and it calibrates the levels on all your speakers.
Nice. How much was the receiver?
It was less than $300.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Huh.
Yeah, you have you can bump up a little bit to of course. I mean, there's always room up. But this was the least expensive model that I was willing to put in my house.
Yeah.
and would still address the immediate concern of needing a lot of HDMI.
Yeah.
So, I'm really happy with it. I got to tell you, it's been a really nice piece of machinery for me.
What's your audio setup?
Right now, not much. I have just what would I call it? It's a 3.1. I have active sub, two fronts, a center. I don't have the rears because I just remodeled. I just rearranged everything, so I've still got everything torn down.
Okay,
but yeah. I have a really nice set of dipoles for surround speakers.
Okay,
they're really hot stuff. I love them.
All right,
but yeah, this guy does like Dolby Pro Logic 2. Blobbity blobbity blah, like I don't even know. Pretty much anything past ProLogic and Dolby Digital, I can't tell the difference anyway, so I don't really pay too much attention, but it has an awful lot of audio decoding going on.
Yes. Yeah, well they keep coming out with new codecs, so
yeah. And I guess I haven't even played the Wii since I got it all set up, but I know some of the stuff I have on the Wii really wants ProLogic 2, and I know the PlayStation 3 probably will be super happy with it too.
Yes. So with my new PC, actually, the built-in audio on that supports true six-channel 5.1 audio, where it's outputting six individual channels instead of doing some sort of encoding like Dolby Pro Logic.
Yeah, my hack has that too.
Yeah.
And
that is very nice.
it's pretty great.
Yeah, because it works with anything. You know, any game you play. There's even, you can get podcasts out there that play surround sound experiences.
GTFO. That's awesome.
I know, right?
When can we do this show in 5.1? Can we do a DTS podcast?
We could try. The problem is that the audio files get really big.
No kidding.
Yeah. The audio files get really big, and I'm sure it's a pain to put together. A lot of these, the only podcasts I've found that have tried to do this typically fade out after a couple episodes because I think they realize how much work this actually is to produce.
Have you ever gone to a Beastie Boys show?
No, can't say I have.
They do their stage shows in quadraphonic, and it's awesome. Like it's really something else.
Nice. Okay, moving on. We're talking about rearranging everything.
Yeah, and I gotta move. That's the other thing too. My Marantz is probably gonna go downstairs soon because I'm gonna move my home office from the upstairs down into the bigger room down there, and I'm gonna take that guy with me. And I think I'm gonna probably use the digital out on my computer, and just feed it into the Marantz.
That'll work. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'll be rocking out, I guess you could say.
Nice. Yeah. But as part of this whole process, you started documenting your cables and accessories, right?
Yeah. Well, that's just it, right? Because part of the cleanup was I got to tear out like an awful lot of stuff. And I've also been trying to, like, in general, get rid of a lot of the crap and clutter that I accumulate because I'm a borderline hoarder. Like, I'm probably like one major life disaster, like an unexpected death away from being like, seriously, like buried alive by my own junk. Because I watched that show, and I know, like, I can see a little bit of myself in just about every single one of them, except the rat guy, the guy that had the 12,000 rats in his house. Like, I don't think I'm gonna ever be that. But I started taking pictures of things that I put into plastic storage bins because I would spend like an hour if I needed a cable or something, like rooting through bins trying to find out which one it was. So I came up with this idea. I've got an iPhone. I'll just take pictures of stuff, and as I'm like, you know, wrapping them up and bagging them and throwing them into this bin. And then I have like this iPhoto album that I can thumb through, and I have the albums done by bin. So bin number one, for example, I know what USB cables I have in bin one.
So, and this is preferable to maintaining a written list of things?
I think so, because I like to eyeball them.
Okay.
I don't know that I would always, you know, sometimes I wouldn't necessarily know either, like the power adapter. Well, I guess in some cases I would, but, some of the power adapters, like I'll know the voltages and stuff, but I don't know what they're for, but they might have like a logo or something that I'll recognize, or I don't know. It just seems it's also quicker. I gotta be honest. Like, I'm not going to inventory everything by like typing it all out.
Yeah.
It's definitely quicker, and I'm going to be digging through a barrel looking for it anyway. So having an idea of what it looks like, I think, is more preferable to the description.
Probably. All right. That makes a lot of sense. Have you had any success stories so far in going and finding things?
Yes. While I was rewiring, for example, I needed at one point to find out where I had put some composite audio cables, because one of the things I wanted to test was the analog audio out and on one of my other devices. And I was like, well, I got to go find an analog audio cable now. And I consulted Ye Album and dug it out post haste. So
nice. Very good.
Yeah, I was pretty happy. Oh, and I've also been doing this with a Delicious Library. So I've been kind of like on an indexing and inventory kick lately. I've been scanning in barcodes for DVDs, Blu-ray discs, and video games, and then putting the boxes away. So,
and there is attached to the show notes, people can find your blog post on this, which has a photo of, or a screenshot of all of your photos arranged neatly in an album.
that's for the first bin. I don't think I've got the second one done when I did that. But yeah, it's actually worked out really well. I like it.
Cool. All right. Okay, moving on. Another random topic here. TiVo. We kind of want to talk about TiVo because you had noted that it's evolved significantly from what it used to be.
Yeah. And also, as part of my rearranging of the living room, I'm also my antenna now is in a weird place, and I'm not able to get as many HD channels as I used to. And since I punted cable, I got to figure out what I'm going to do. I mean, I don't really actually watch live TV that often, but I can tell you this, that I can get three high definition, delicious, glorious public broadcasting.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, like, yeah.
There's some awesome PBS.
There's no better signal than the PBS signal.
Oh, yeah. It's outstanding. Yeah. And then you know, I got like a CW affiliate, and I don't know what it is. Like, I think I might have to get a different antenna or something. I don't know. But I'm pretty happy with it. But I had higher hopes because I had briefly entertained the idea of the new TiVo, because what's awesome about TiVo now is that they have a version that you can – it has two OTA or over-the-air tuners, so we can record two shows at the same time in HD.
Yep,
and that's awesome.
Yeah.
And it's also a much better PVR than your cable company will ever give you.
I
have no idea what is up people's butts that they cannot like just play ball with TiVo and let them supply the PVR.
Yeah, I think it is. Obviously the cable companies want to do things like sell pay-per-view and sell ads on your device and that sort of stuff.
Don't do that with TiVo. I am certain that TiVo would do that.
So TiVo does. Yeah. TiVo does a couple things. So actually, my parents have TiVo and really like it. They use it just recently moved over to, because they never, ever used a cable box. They would never.
Me either.
They would not subscribe to any cable package that necessitated the use of a cable box.
It's stupid. Cable boxes are dumb. And
so, right, go ahead.
Well, when I had cable in Virginia and DC area, I had I don't remember. Was it Cox? I don't even remember. But I had to have a box for whatever it was, and it was awful. And but I had a TiVo then. I had two. I had a Series 1, 30 gig, kicking it old school, and then I had a Series 2 that I actually like, you know, cracked the lid on and upgraded. To add more storage.
Nice.
But eventually I just wasn't using it anymore. Because it was the cable issue. Like, I couldn't get good programming, and the HD ones came out, and I'm like, all right, I'm done.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this over-the-air HD sounds awesome.
Yeah. So not only that, but, and this is my parents' situation, so finally their cable provider, Cox in Southern California, allowed people to install their own cable cards. So they just mail you a cable card, and you just have to install it. Used to be they'd have to like come out and maintain it, or come out and install themselves and all that stuff. Now they will just mail you a cable card.
cable card was is a standard that has not seen really great adoption for whatever reason.
Well, I believe it's legally mandated, which has forced the television providers to make it available, but really they're not going to make it all that available.
Okay.
So typically it comes with an installation fee. Typically it's not, they don't pitch it as being a particularly valuable experience.
Installation fee for them to insert a card.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a credit card that you slide into a slot.
Yes.
And they're going to like send out a technician to do it because you can't possibly manage. You know, we live in a society where you slide a card through a card reader two dozen times a day, but you can't possibly figure out where it goes on your TV.
It is not a hard operation. And so
cable companies are such ass wipes.
So, but with TiVo, actually, if you do have a cable company that allows this cable card, that has a cable card available and doesn't have any ridiculous rigmarole around you being able to install it, in TiVo, you can insert up to two cable cards and just be rolling with any cable subscription package other than some more complicated pay-per-view stuff. But any normal cable subscription package, your TiVo can pick it right up and go with no need of a cable box. It completely replaces the cable box.
Or you stick to the over-the-air stuff and you get all your HD for free.
Right. Yes. Yeah. If you're fine with basic channels and PBS, which is fantastic, as we established.
Yeah. Most of the stuff that you... I mean, unless... If you're like a big ear sports guy, so you probably have a far different set of needs than I do. And I think that most people who get a lot of big cable packages also probably want that selection.
Well, the issue is live events. The issue is cycling, golf, a couple other things that basically I want to watch live that aren't on traditional channels a lot of the time.
But don't they also have like big blackouts for some of that anyways? Like there was some big rigmarole for Red Sox game last week, right?
Oh, yeah. Like, I mean, baseball blackouts are terrible. Screwed. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
For baseball, I actually watch baseball online anyway. So.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yep. But anyway, TiVo, though, in addition to all this, they've made it a lot easier to expand the storage. You can actually buy for, I think, just around $100, you can buy one of these Western Digital MyDVR expanders. Mm-hmm. In either 500 gigabytes or 1 terabyte, it's eSATA, so you just plug it into the back of the TiVo and go. Yeah.
You know, I'd looked at it like buying an eSATA drive for my workstation at home, and they're like, I was at Best Buy and I saw that like they only had one, and it was $250.
Really?
So I'm a little surprised to hear that they have one that's not that expensive.
Yeah, it's super cheap, and you can actually use it as a normal desktop hard drive. It doesn't have any TiVo specific stuff in it. It's just made to work precisely with TiVo. But I'd imagine you can plug any eSATA external hard drive into the back of TiVo, and it actually will use it just as if it is internal storage. It'll meld it all together.
Awesome.
Yeah,
awesome.
It's fantastic. Yeah,
that is really cool.
Yeah, so TiVo's come a long way, and definitely I don't have one myself, but I've thought about getting one too. Actually, it's definitely looking pretty appealing.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, the stuff that I watch is mainly network stuff, and it's all network stuff, to be honest. I mean, I guess some of the stuff from like the HBO and Showtime shows that I get when they come out on Netflix or what have you. But
sure,
I guess they I mean, it's expensive now if you do the lifetime sub.
I think the lifetime is like $250, something like that.
Yeah, so you're gonna be out the door at like $600.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
But
which is a pretty expensive one-time cost, but it is a one-time cost.
But there's also a lot of open source and free software, and even the stuff that TiVo supplies that lets you do extraction. So you can run software on your Mac or your Windows machine, and it will actually pull the shows off of your TiVo and whack out the commercials for you.
Oh, wow. I mean, I knew you could pull shows. I didn't know it could...
There's one that automatically whips out commercials.
That's fantastic. It would be great if it could then put it back on the TiVo.
Well, you wouldn't have to, right? Like, because then once you've got it off, you can just convert it into whatever format you want. If you have like an Apple TV or an XBMC device or something like that.
Well, I mean, I was saying if you want to play it through the TiVo, but...
Doesn't TiVo play things off UPnP? So if you like rip it and put it on your NAS, won't it see it?
It would be an awfully roundabout way of doing it, but that might be a solution.
Well, I mean, because that's what I do with my PS3, right? Like, my PlayStation 3, I play stuff in the Apple TV also. I play stuff off of my NAS at home all the time. That's what I do.
Yeah. Good work.
And I mean, since the TiVo is not unlimited, I mean, it's got big storage, and it sounds like you can add quite a bit. But what is, like, an hour of... what's an hour of HD take up?
I think with the... I think the base model is like 20 hours of HD, and the higher end model is like 40 or 60 or something.
So we're going to guess it's like 10 gig for an hour.
That seems high.
Mm. For uncompressed HD?
No, it does compress though, doesn't it?
I don't know.
I think it does.
All right. I'm pretty sure it's close to 10 gigs an hour.
Huh. Okay. I could believe that. Yeah, it seems a little high, but if it is...
20 hours would be like a 200 gig drive.
Yeah. Okay.
And if you went to a terabyte, what do they say that a terabyte gets you?
We'd have to do our research.
I bet it's 100 hours.
All right.
Hey, did you hear from any attorneys last week that...
No, we did not get angry attorneys emailing into us. That was a good move. A better result than I thought. Maybe we weren't talking as blatantly ignorantly as we thought we were.
Or maybe they just don't give a rip.
There you go. Or maybe there's no one listening. That's a very, very possible possible reason for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So talking about XBMC, though, you mentioned it there. XBMC is either a complement to TiVo, as you talked about there, but also could be completely replacing TiVo if you wanted to go with your own sort of home-cooked home theater PC solution.
No. History lesson time.
Okay, go ahead.
XBMC originally was written for the first generation Xbox. It ran on a modded Xbox. So if you had like a hardware mod or a software mod, you could install this software called XBMC, which was Xbox Media Center.
Yep.
And you had to have either the binaries that you downloaded from the internet or the Xbox developer kit or something somewhat illicitly, and then were able to build your own binaries that would then run on your Xbox. It does not do recording.
So it's not built in, no.
No, it has no PVR capability in and of itself, but there are things that extend. So you can add other software onto it that will give you some of that functionality.
Yes.
But XBMC, as it's now known, they've stopped development for the original Xbox, which was a Celeron 500, right? So they've it couldn't do HD. People had a hard time and really struggled to get even like high bitrate H.264 to play back on it. But these days you can get XBMC for the Apple TV 2, for Mac OS 10, for Linux, for Windows, for just about everything. They even have like standalone, if you wanted to try on a home theater PC, you can get like a USB flash drive or a CD image that's an all-in-one Media Center PC on a disk, right? You just boot the computer with and then it goes immediately into XBMC. It supports UPnP, UDLNA servers for network audio and video playback. It also supports SIFS, SMB file shares, probably does NFS too, right? Like, I guess that the OS does. XBMC is a very broad software that has great support, and it's free.
And not only in the vein of support, it's not only the built-in features, but people have gone and added things like Netflix, like I think you can get satellite radio, you can get YouTube, all these channels on top of it that you can install as plugins.
Yeah.
But I have it on my desktop, and I do UPnP streaming from my laptop because my iTunes library is on my laptop, and that works quite well. I was listening to Spanish guitar music earlier, as you heard.
It sounded lovely. I thought it was
fantastic. Yeah. Okay, but XBMC is really nice because it's got this very couch-friendly interface that you can control with a mouse, a keyboard, potentially a remote or other controller. Although I might require some sort of key mapping software to get that working.
Yeah, and there's also, like, I know on the Apple TV, I haven't quite figured it out yet, but there's a way to use the Harmony to send special extra buttons, because the Apple TV only has, like, 5 buttons on the remote. And so to get around some of those limitations, the XBMC developers have added things like if you press and hold, and there's also other signals you can send to it. that I think is kind of cool. And I don't know. There's some pretty interesting stuff that you can do with it, but I haven't really sunk my teeth into it yet because it's not officially supported, of course, because you have to jailbreak your Apple TV to do it. But
right.
Like the one thing my wife really misses right now is that on the XBMC on Apple TV is the 30-second skip. That's not on. It doesn't do it on the Apple TV XBMC because when you rock over to the right, it does like a much bigger skip.
Oh, okay.
It does like the up arrow skip instead.
Wow.
Have you noticed that? Like if you do in XBMC, if you go like right arrow on a keyboard or right on a remote, it'll do like a quick skip, like 30 seconds forward and back.
Sure.
And then if you do the up arrow or up on the remote, it'll do like a big jump.
And it does that one instead. Wow.
Yeah, it does that all the time.
So. Oh, that's too bad. Huh.
Yeah, but you can remap that and you can change it. You just have to edit. There's like an XML file.
Okay.
And then you edit that and then you're good to go. But I don't know where it's at yet, but I'll sort it all out. I haven't been able to take the time to really sit down and dig into that yet. But
right.
XBMC has a lot of good skins too. Like there's a lot of different interfaces you can put on top of it.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I think I'm still on the default, but I've definitely been tempted to take a look into some of that stuff because people have made some pretty impressive reskins.
Yeah. There's some really beautiful ones out there.
Yeah. Yep.
Have you seen this? When I was at Best Buy, I saw these ridiculous 3D televisions. Have you seen this?
So 3D TV, I do not approve.
It's dumb. And like you have to wear glasses for is stupid.
like life, if you have non-20/20 vision.
I wear eyeglasses and they're awesome. But what I don't like is if I'm watching TV wearing another pair of goggles on top of the glasses I already have.
Yeah.
That's dumb.
No, that's terrible. So,
and have you ever seen like the line of like the unwashed who are trying them on at the Best Buy?
No. Oh, this sounds like a good pastime.
This is
walking
like,
into a Best Buy and just watching this happen.
Oh, you can see like you can actually if you count if you stand there long enough, you can actually see people getting psoriasis. Like there are enough skin conditions changing hands in that Best Buy that I know what to do with. And like I'm enough of a germaphobe where I can't even stand to watch people like trying on these goggles.
Yeah.
Because I'm waiting for like you can like there's lice. There's gotta be like
and you put it on, it's all sweaty and
we're gonna check out the 3D TV. Check it out. Those TVs in 3D. Like what am I supposed to do? Like I'm not gonna sit there and
So the other thing is, even with the glasses, even under very ideal conditions, the effect is not revolutionary. It's not that impressive or astounding.
I don't give a crap until I can like smack my R2 unit and have Princess Leia appear hologram in front of me. Like that's what I think 3D TV needs to be.
Interactive, basically.
Well, it needs to be like a three-dimensional projection image.
Oh, I see. So you can walk around it and yeah.
What is the point of just having like a little bit of depth?
Yeah.
Added.
It's like a it's like a parlor trick or an amusement park effect. It's not
It's like those X-ray goggles or X-ray glasses they used to sell in the back of comic books like in the 60s. Like they had like this. If you ever seen some of these ads, they're amazing cuz they're like send $1.50 and 3 proofs of purchase to get your X-ray goggles. And they showed like, you know, some boy who was wearing these goggles and he could see like a girl's bra.
Right.
And he was, oh, this is awesome. Really all it was like, you know, 2 sheets of film and it gave like, it distorted your vision sufficiently that you thought you were seeing through.
That you had no idea what you were seeing anymore.
Yeah. You could not possibly tell. But it's like sea monkeys are actually like tiny shrimp. Like they're not really monkeys dancing in the water.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. It's a total scam. I don't know anyone that's actually purchased one, but if I did, I would never talk to them again. that's like the guys that buy the monster HDMI cables.
Oh yeah. Oh well, you got to get gold plated. We should have talked about this, but you got to get gold plated cables because if you don't, your HDMI signal is not going to be good.
Well, it'll leak onto the carpet.
It'll leak onto the carpet, and the static lint interference from the carpet will negate your pixels.
My We have like 1 minute left, but I got to tell the story. I'll be as quick as I can. My mother, for a while, she was a teacher, like at a trade school, and she taught like writing. She taught like, you know, resume writing and things like that. It was for kind of like, I don't know, like a small college, but she knew an electrician who was once called in to this elderly woman's house, and she said she was complaining because sometimes when she would touch things, she would get an electric shock. So the electrician did a survey, you know, walked around the house and made sure that everything was really in order and on the up and up. And he was like, yeah, you know, I'm not really seeing anything that could cause it. And she's like, I'm telling you, it's the darndest thing. Like, you know, she'd like walk over to something and touch it and she'd get a shock. And she'd be like, see, where is that coming from? So he looked around the room and he put his thumbs in his belt loops and he said, oh, there's your problem. And she's like, what? He's like, you know those plastic outlet covers? And she says, yeah. He's like, the electricity's dripping out of the sockets onto the carpet. You've got to put these plastic caps on all of your sockets to prevent the electricity from dripping out. And she thanked him and sent him on his way and never heard from him again. But I to this day, I think that's an amazing story.
That's pretty impressive. Yeah.
I hope he didn't kill her. You know, maybe I shouldn't tell that story. But yeah, 3D TV is terrible. Gold-plated cables are dumb because digital is digital. It's either on or it's off. It's a one or a zero.
Yep. You're either getting the signal or you're not. There's no midpoint.
Gold has nothing to do with it. It's like, I mean, I would probably argue that, you know, for digital stuff, it has zero bearing whatsoever.
Yeah. Okay, but yeah, definitely do not buy 3D TVs. I'm saying don't buy on that. Maybe the technology will improve and get amazing, but in all likelihood, it's just going to be gone. Yeah.
Having said that, if either of the manufacturers of 3D televisions want to send Alan or myself a 60-inch model, we'll review it.
Yeah, we'll give it a fair look.
Yeah, what's like a 3-year survey sound right
yeah,
to you? Like,
yeah, and, really and we'll let people know. Yeah.
Yeah. We'll even do a weekly update.
Yeah.
30 seconds into
of how strained our eyes are getting week by week.
Yeah. And like, yeah, all the sores we're getting from sharing our 3D goggles.
All right. Well, that will do it for episode 9 of the Hell Yeah Show. If you want to see more about the show, view past episodes, that sort of thing, the place to go is show.hellyeah.com. And you can also email us at
show@hellyeah.com, HELLYEAH.com, and our Twitter feed, Hell Yeah Show at Twitter.
All right, twitter.com/HellYeahShow.
Yeah.
That will do it for Hell Yeah Show episode 9. We'll be back next week. We're doing this show every Monday, so do tune in a week.
Monday is good day.